Thank you very much. Thank you for coming. Now, basically, from the last two speakers, this is where you're going to start seeing some HappySnap data. And first, the second author of the talk is Don Hornick, who was a long-term agronomist at the Hermiston Agricultural Research Extension Center. And he passed away September 28th, just a little over a month ago. And his contributions to this project, as well as agronomy in the Oregon, are going to be sorely missed. Now, remote sensing is the technology used least in precision agriculture. And the first one was, if you're using satellites, the data could be obscured by clouds. The cost goes up when you get smaller pixel sizes. And just from a vegetation index, like NDVI, you can't really tell what the rate of fertilization would be. And last but most important is that there are alternatives that are quite useful, and such as the yield monitor data alone, you get most of the information you need for fertilizer management, or you can use on-the-go proximal sensors such as a Green Seeker or a Crop Circle. So basically the question is how much extra value does UAS bring to precision agriculture? Unmanned aircraft systems are remote sensing platforms. That's something that Pablo made very, very clear. It has advantages, but it's a platform. It's really the sensors, okay? And that's what Dr. Hakavera was talking about, the sensors, new systems. FAA uses systems to emphasize the importance of the pilot, onboard navigation, launch, ground control equipment, what Josh was alluding to. And it may be important for precision farming. The information for precision farming is important at the 10 to 20 meter scale. This is at the scale where you have variations in topography and variations in soil properties, okay? But I'm going to propose the data that to supply this information is best acquired at the 1 to 5 centimeter scale, okay? And it's important to realize that the data scale, the scale at which we acquire the data, is not the same as the scale in which the data are applied for information. Low altitude is required for very high spatial resolution. There's simply no way you're going to get low enough to get 1 centimeter resolution. We can fly under the weather and clouds to deliver the data promptly. It does affect data quality, but you still get data. And you fly small areas, so less time is spent data processing, and you can get the information very quickly to the user. We did an experiment in collaboration with Paradigm ISR, Boeing Research and Technology, and Oregon State University, the Hermiston Agricultural Research Station, to look at the use of small UAS for irrigation and for fertilizer management. And if you go into Google Earth, you'll see the experiment right here. We got the image. Our team used two different systems. The first system was a Tetracam Hawkeye parafoil, and this was chosen because it has a very open design and it can carry a large amount of payload, so we can start doing experiments with different sensor configurations. For getting large areas, we used the Procerus Unicorn, so that it could fly literally within an hour, three or four very large center pivot fields. We used a randomized block design for fertilizer trials, 15 by 10 meters, and we used four rates of fertilizer, with the green ones here being the standard application rate. We use Tetracam ADC Lite, and we got on a single image, the pixel sizes varied from 1 to 4 centimeters. Now, this is not really a sensor problem, it was a platform problem, because with the parafoil, the platform was down on cords. And so as it was going through the motions, it was swinging back and forth. So one side, where it was at a more oblique angle, it was 4 centimeters, and when it was directly nadir, it was 1 centimeter. And we placed all sorts of markers in the field for geolocation. It didn't work too well, because when you get data at 1 centimeter resolution, it's very hard to process to get a good mosaic. So we had to analyze each image individually. Now you can see here is one, and here's another of the low nitrogen. You can see how thin those plots are. You can see how thick this one is, and this here, the very high nitrogen. So you can see on this image, which was taken in June, that there were very distinct differences in the treatment. We are focusing, as what Pablo was talking about, we're trying to retrieve physiologically meaningful data from happy snap pictures. The leaf chlorophyll content, we get very large differences in the green. We have very few differences in the red. We have, even though these are very parallel, there's very large differences in the near-infrared, and then you need the near-infrared for leaf area index. So spectral indices are still used because it has many good properties. It reduces the effects of slope, aspect, and irradiance on your remotely sensed data. With the ADC Light, we use two different indices, NDVI and a green NDVI. And the reason is that the green NDVI is more sensitive to chlorophyll content and less sensitive to leaf area index. NDVI is more sensitive to leaf area index and less sensitive to chlorophyll, but they're both going to be highly correlated. But it's the difference in correlation that we were hoping to show that had the information about nitrogen fertilization. And it was quite an effort, but we got data essentially twice a week this was at the Herrick station. And I'm going to say that the production systems brought in by Boeing, where they were going through big, long safety lists, were things I would never have thought of for an operational program. It is simply when you have trained pilots operating these things, there is a different mentality in putting these up. So each image was analyzed separately because of the sway of the platform. The sway resulted in different view angles, which resulted in different pixel sizes. And for each image, and because of the twisting and turning of the platform, we had insufficient ground control points to do any sort of geometric correction. So we basically outlined regions of interest, acquired average average digital numbers for the different bands, and did calculation of green NDVI and NDVI. And we had to do a correction based on exposure. What the other speakers emphasized is the need for calibration, because we are not only comparing one picture to another picture, but we're also trying to compare the change in the pictures over time. And that's going to require some sort of correction. And the easiest correction to do is a vegetation index. So we set out these tarps here, 5 different colors. We also measured the spectral irradiance in both the visible and shortwave infrared. And the digital numbers are proportional to the reflectance of the target, to the irradiance, and the exposure time. So when you do a vegetation index, this is supposed to divide out. So we had these out and did the calibrations for each flight. And here's a little problem with the cameras. The ADC Lite, a normal consumer digital camera, the three green, red, and blue channels are all sensitive to near-infrared light, which is why the cameras have an internal near-infrared blocking filter, a hot mirror filter. Now, when you take a Tetracam ADC Lite or any of the Kodak cameras originally pioneered by Leo Zeglado, you had a blue blocking filter here, and so now your blue channel recorded the near-infrared, and then you got two channels, green and near-infrared, and red and near-infrared. So you then had to do color post-processing with Pixel Wrench software. Well, this is what it looked like coming in from the camera. Basically, your output DN equals your input DN. This is what we saw for the five tarps using their color correction from Pixel Wrench. And here's our two best guesses for what the color correction matrix should be. In other words, based on the color correction matrix that we got in Pixel Wrench, we could not come up with an acceptable color infrared image. We had to make corrections for both the color distribution as well as other processes. And what we found was the calibration between NDVI from digital numbers and NDVI from the TARP reflectances varied systematically, and it was based on exposure time. Now, as I said, exposure time divides out. So this is physically impossible unless something like the calibration lines were correlated with something like the color temperature of the sky. So in other words, you get slightly more blue light and green light than the near-infrared light. So anyway, but from the EXIF data, we did determine exposure time, and we calculated the calibration. We also acquired on July 25th, we got color and color infrared airborne data. The pixel sizes were 1 meter. And just by fortunate coincidence, the TARPs were out there. So we used the TARPs for an empirical line calibration. And so we got the TARP reflectance versus the predicted reflectance. It looked very good. And when we then looked at the NDVI from the Tetracam versus the aerial photograph, okay, here are this is the relationship of using the digital numbers for both the air photograph and the UAS Tetracam, and here's when we got up here for the corrections for the reflectance. And so Tetracam suggested it. All you have to do is just move the NDVI up or down to based on a known target. It's a little harder for green NDVI. They spent no time calibrating the green channel because it's not part of NDVI, and so there's essentially no response of the Tetracam ADC Lite, but after we do all the calibrations, it's right there on the one-to-one line. Now, early season response to nitrogen deficiency is slower growth. So here, the red up here is June 22nd. There was very little change in the chlorophyll content as measured by a SPAD chlorophyll meter, but there was a large change in leaf area index measured through septometer. Now, one point, yes, we get a very large change in leaf area index, but here, the lowest leaf area indexes are 2, and this is at the point where NDVI is saturated, and green NDVI is saturated for leaf area index. So we can't use the sort of plot scale vegetation indices for early season nitrogen management based on NDVI or green NDVI. We have to come up with another way of using the data that is independent of the vegetation indices. And here are some low-scale color infrared photographs. Here is the low nitrogen treatment. Here is the high nitrogen treatment on June 22nd. And the biggest difference here is look at the gap here between rows, and here's the equivalent gap in between rows. The biggest difference that is affecting the vegetation indices is plant cover. And to get good estimates of plant cover, okay, what you need are very small pixels so that you can start getting in between and seeing the shadow. In fact, with true color cameras, you actually start counting the yellow leaves. And that is actually an even better way of determining nitrogen deficiency in this experiment. We have to replicate it some more. Okay, the calibrated indices were very stable and very uniform, just what you would expect based on other data. And we could not use differences in green NDVI versus NDVI to distinguish among nitrogen treatments for a given date. So we had to reject our hypothesis. But there was a strong difference in slope among dates. We acquired a WorldView 2 image on August 15th, 2 months late. Talk about fast turnaround time. The retrieved chlorophyll indices down here were very accurate. The data are beautiful, but what good are the data 2 months late? Aerial application with low-flying aircraft is one of the most dangerous occupations in civilian aviation, according to the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board. Complaints to the FAA approval process don't consider other aircraft in the area. UAS may be a safer alternative overall, but there will be flight failures which will damage aircraft, sensors, and property. Now, the Association of Unmanned Vehicle Systems International came out with an economic report, and they're saying that over the next 2 or 3 years, there should be something on the order of $10 billion worth of economic activity based on the UAS to agriculture. You are the market for these systems. And what they want is they see you as a big market. Now, the sensors acquire data. They don't acquire information. Users, farmers, want information, not data. They don't care whether the NDVI at this point is 0.2 and the NDVI is over here is 0.25. They want to say, okay, how much nitrogen do I need to apply over here versus over here? And I'm going to suggest, based on the results of this experiment, that we can get the data more easily by having very small pixel sizes on the order of 1 centimeter. I think that the U.S. market for agriculture may be crop consultants, buying systems. Nutrient management systems are only required, 2 months per year in a given area? If you buy one of these systems, you're going to need full-time work. So you have to have other sources of income aside from agriculture. And this could be simply looking for diseases and insect damage in potatoes. Again, looking for insect damage is a lot easier with 1 centimeter pixels than it is with a 10 meter squared NDVI. It's very flexible, and it can be used for lots of different things. So in conclusion, UAS is an important remote sensing platform. It carries the sensor for precision agriculture. And that's because UAS can fly at lower altitudes more safely. And they can deliver the data in a timely manner. The calibration of the ADC light and the other sensors are critical for getting consistent data over a growing season and for comparing two different fields. You don't want to sit there and run the data and develop different calibration equations for each field simply because you're acquiring the data slightly differently. However, methods based on satellite data analysis, such as spectral indices, are very difficult to apply with smaller pixels. And that's because the pixel-to-pixel variance is much larger. And this, the real technology, we have the technologies for everything, but what we need is computer vision technology to go through these thousands to 10,000s of images to look for patterns related to the different problems of nitrogen fertilization and insect damage. Thank you very much.